Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first wave, Samanya Bhakti, first division, verse 11, where Rupa Goswami is defining Uttam Bhakti, pure devotion. Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmad Yanavritam Anukul Yena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama, which is the definition of pure devotion. It's, we discussed a couple of days ago how this verse is the essence of all Vedic literature. And all the books of the Goswamis were written to explain this verse so we understand clearly what is pure bhakti, pure devotion. And that way we can practice properly and attain a desired result. And we explained how this verse can be used as a standard of measurement of our activities, our thinking or our activities. Whenever we're doing something, we can say, is this anya bilashita shunyam or anya bilashita purnam? Purnam means full, and full of it. And is my activity full of other desires besides Krishna, or is my activity only for the pleasure of Krishna? So this is, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this is given as a definition of pure bhakti. And when you read the Nectar Devotion, Srila Prabhupada, he's making, it's an interesting point that I mentioned in my notes. In his Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada says that this verse gives the definition of a pure devotee. Because the devotee, he's practicing bhakti, and pure bhakti has its characteristics. It's anukulya, it's favorable to Krishna, and it's anushilanam, means it's cultivation and its activities with body, mind, and speech. All of our senses are engaged, and we have a favorable attitude. And that service is free from coverings of karma and jnana. Means mayavadi, knowledge of Brahman, and desires for enjoyment. So that's pure bhakti. Then Prabhupada, he says in Nectar Devotion that this is the definition of a pure devotee. It's interesting. So he says, this is the definition of a pure devotee. His service is favorable. This is what he writes. His service is favorable, and it is always in relation to Krishna. In order to keep the purity of such Krishna conscious activities, one must be freed from all material desires and philosophical speculation. So this is Prabhupada's way of saying one must be freed from all material desires, means anya bilashita. And philosophical speculation, that means jnana. That means not clear conception of the personality of Godhead. So in defining Uttam Bhakti, Rupa Goswami, in his definition, he mentions what Jiva Goswami explains is the Sarup Lakshana, which means the primary characteristic, and Tatastha Lakshana, which is secondary. So the verse starts off with the secondary. The first line, two lines of the verse, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmad Yanavritam, are actually the Tatastha Lakshana. Like we say, Tatastha Jiva, on the borderline. So this is a secondary characteristic, and the primary is given at the end of the verse, Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilana Bhakti Uttama. So we want to break down the verse and examine the different words and different sections so we can more clearly understand it. So this is the Sarup Lakshana. If you want to have a definition of Sarup Lakshana, means the intrinsic, that which is primary to itself. The intrinsic or primary, chief, main, or direct characteristic. Quality or attributes which describe the fundamental nature of an object or a person, that's called Sarup Lakshana. For example, like you might say, if you define a cow, if you say a cow has four legs and a tail and horns, then that's not called Swarup Lakshana. Because so many animals, what is a cow? Oh, a cow is an animal with four legs and a tail and horns. Oh, okay. And then you go out and you see a buffalo. I say, let me apply my definition here. Four legs, tail, and horns. Oh, well, this must be a cow. Or maybe you see any kind of thing. What, these kind of deer, they also have a little tail and four legs and horns. So Sarvalakshana means that intrinsic characteristic, that quality or primary characteristic which distinguishes that object or person from any other object or person. So you have to say that a cow has, you have to have a more specific definition, four legs, a tail, horns, and then it also has a milk bag in the back. And then, but then so does a buffalo. So then you have to, in this way you have to find what is a Swarup Lakshana. Well, you say, well, a cow is white or brown or so many colors. And so then, okay, when you see a buffalo, it's black, so then it can't be a buffalo. So in this way, Swarup Lakshana is that primary characteristic. So that's the primary characteristic of bhakti. The second part of the verse is Anukulya and Krishna Anushilanam, which we'll understand what that means. And secondary characteristic is, well, first we'll discuss the primary characteristic. So the last two lines of the verse, Rupa Goswami is describing the culture and activities favorable to Krishna. Therefore, this is the Swarup Lakshana of Uttam Bhakti, because such culture or activities acquaints us with the inherent nature or the Swarup of Bhakti. So in other words, the Swarup, what is the basic essence? What does bhakti mean? It may have different expressions. Maybe bhakti is not covered by materialistic activities or karmakanda, or maybe bhakti is not covered by brahmagyan or studying these type of impersonal philosophies. But what is bhakti? What is the real quality of bhakti? It means acting to please Krishna with your words, body, senses. And your mind is favorably disposed towards him. This is bhakti, no matter what else. Forget about karma again. That's like, if that's there or that's not there. Because sometimes someone is performing bhakti, but there's some mixture. There is some karma, or there is some gyan mixed in. But you have to find whether the essential qualities are there, then you can understand there's some bhakti there. Are they acting to try to please Krishna, doing something that's favorable? This is for his pleasure. Then we can understand. So in this verse, Rupa Goswami explains, he's defining the Swarup Lakshana of Uttam Bhakti. These are the primary attributes. First, that devotional service is for Krishna, or who's the topmost form of Godhead. And devotional service is an active engagement. It's culture or service, which is Anushilanam. And the third thing is that devotional service is performed in a favorable mood, which means agreeable to Krishna's taste. In other words, the activities that we do, they give delight and happiness to Krishna. And this Jiva Goswami's commentary, which Vana Maharaj has translated here, we summarized in notebook, he takes the first word, Anushilanam, explains what that means. So shilanam, the word shilanam means cultivation or activity. And this comes from Sanskrit root, shil, S-H long I-L, shil, which means to act, to practice, to serve, to worship, to meditate. Right? That's the active meaning. In other words, these are bodily activities. You're practicing, you're serving, you're worshiping. Then the non-active meaning, that shila can mean samadhi, contemplation. Right? So that will come in a later stage of bhakti, samadhi and contemplation. So he says that to hear attentively, to perceive, to cultivate. In other words, the Sanskrit verbal root, shield, expresses action, to worship, to serve, to practice, and it expresses non-action. In other words, action is you're moving, but also shield also has the idea that you're not moving, that you're just sitting in one place. Like sometimes when Gaudiya Math, there's one disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, his name was Akinchan Krishnadas Baba. And he liked to sit in the temple and chant Hare Krishna day and night. He was chanting 1 lakh, 2 lakhs a day, right from the beginning when he joined. And the other devotees were so much busy in service, and they were complaining to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, it's Akinchana Krishnadas, he's not doing anything. He's not helping in the kitchen, he's not going out on Sankirtan or collecting alms. And he just sits all day upstairs in the corner and chants Hare Krishna. So they thought he wasn't doing bhakti, that he wasn't active. But he was absorbed. There was no action, at least physical action, but his mind was absorbed with the holy name. So this is what he's saying here, that the word shil can express action or non-action. And Vishnu Chakravarti, he explains the same word. In other words, for us, we don't know Sanskrit and we think these things are all like maybe complicated. But the Acharyas, this particular verse has an 8-page purport. Because this is the definition of bhakti. There is no other definition to be found, no more perfect definition of uttam bhakti than this. So therefore, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath, they've dissected it and presented it very point by point so that we understand exactly what it is that we're trying to practice. Because we say we're practicing bhakti or bhakti yoga, whatever. So Vishwanath says, shil means active or positive cultivation involving the body, mind, and words. And then, so that's the positive side, but it also includes, it's like accepting and rejecting. The negative side is, the negative form of cultivation is, because cultivation means action, is that we avoid seva and nam aparads, which means offenses to the deity and the holy name. So this is, it's cultivation, but you can't say that it's favorable cultivation for bhakti. But in other words, there's things we have to do which are favorable, and things we also have to do which are unfavorable. So you do have to avoid, it's something you have to consciously do. We do have to avoid making offenses to the deities and to the holy name. So then, how do we do that? Well, we have to learn what are the offenses. Because every day we may come in the temple and pass air. You know, and where we come in kirtan, it's an ecstatic kirtan. And we had breakfast when we were home, and then we come to the temple and just fill the temple with air as we jump around. And we think, wow, it's really good for my digestion. I let all my air out and I feel pretty good now. I go to work. People do like that. So that's an aparad, obviously, to pass air in front of anyone, not to speak of the Supreme Person. But, you know, are you riding in a car with someone, and someone in the car, oh, it's freezing cold, winter, and all of a sudden the window comes down because someone passed air in the car and they wanted to, you know, exhaust fan type of thing. So this is, Vishnu is giving a very interesting definition. Is we might think, well, let me just do bhakti and engage in actions of bhakti and I don't have to worry about anything else. But we also have to be careful too. He's saying this is also a type of action. We have to act favorably and also act to avoid unfavorable action, which is an interesting thing that he's saying. So he says these two things. Then, so that's shil, right? This is anu shilanam. Like we say anugatya, we say e nevadanadara sakira anugatu, anugatakara. Right? We say anugata. It means follow. The word anu, we say anukulya or anushilanam. So anu means to follow. Also means following or continuity, repeatedly, or continuously performing activity which gives delight and pleasure and happiness to Krishna. Anushilanam. So he could have just said shilanam, Shilanam means activity, to do activity or cultivation, the word shilanam. But he said, but he qualifies it by saying anu. Because you might say, well, I'm doing uttam bhakti. I chanted for 2 hours and now I'm doing other things. Do my sports or I do whatever, some material activities. But I'm practicing uttam bhakti. But he's saying anu shilanam. That, so when you put anu there, that means continuously. That you cultivate, not that you just cultivate. Yeah, I'm cultivating bhakti. I do a little bhakti every day. I chant a few rounds every day. I read a little Bhagavatam. But then I'm cultivating so many other things. Like I'm growing some mango tree, but I'm also growing some sabji and other things. So he's saying that this cultivation, or these actions, physical and mental actions, are to be done anu shilanam, which means that moment to moment we're engaged in activity for the pleasure and delight and happiness of Krishna. This, if you want to exist in uttam bhakti or attain the perfection of life, because uttam bhakti, sadhana bhakti must be performed on this level of uttam bhakti. Of course, maybe the mind is not engaged. And then in raghunuga bhakti, then the mind begins to get engaged. And still it's uttam bhakti. Then in bhava bhakti, then mind and body are engaged, then emotions are engaged, because spiritual emotions come. So that's also uttam. And in prema bhakti, then also is uttam bhakti. So right from the beginning, we want to be sure that we are on the path of uttam bhakti, even as sadhakas. So now he explains some aspects. Two aspects of anushilanam. This word, right? Characteristics, uttam bhakti. So he said one is pravritti and one is nivritti. You probably heard of these words, pravritti and nivritti. Pravritti means the positive activities that we should accept. And nivritti means to renounce or reject, or the negative. So there's two aspects of anushilanam, the positive and negative. So the pravritti or positive acts include favorable activities performed with the body, mind and words. Kayaka, manasik, and vachika. These are the Sanskrit words. So now, what is anushilanam with the mind? How do we favorably worship Krishna with the mind? So, he explains, thinking, feeling, and willing, these are the functions of the mind. So if we want to practice uttam bhakti, that means we're always thinking about Krishna. So what does that mean? We can think of his form, we can think of his pastimes. But for the beginner in devotion, we should think about the service that we've been given. Think over how to do it better, how to improve, and how to become more, put our heart into it. I have expressions like this in English. Oh, you're doing the work, but your heart is not into it. Maybe you've heard this expression, I don't know about Russia. But you know, someone's just, you know, they're sweeping the floor, but not very well because their heart's not into it. Their mind is somewhere else. Their heart is somewhere else. They're just being paid, like we say, government. It's a government job. Like if someone's working for the government, they don't put their heart into it. Like the man may be hired by the government to cut the grass along the highway. Sometimes they have highways in different places, and somebody comes in a machine and cuts the grass. So he goes all sloppy here and there, driving the machine, and doesn't do a very pukka job. But if you go to his house, where he lives, and where he goes every Sunday and cuts his grass, every blade of grass is cut and trimmed, because it's his house, and his neighborhood, and his friends and relatives are going to look at his yard and say, oh, very nice yard. Very, very, he said, yes, I cut it myself. And so he has some pride and his heart is into it because of mamata. So, feeling that it's my yard. But when it's a government job, even when you have this phrase, oh, it's a government job, the government workers. So this bhakti is that we should have our thinking, feeling, and willing, our whole minds should be positively engaged. And that's the beauty of bhakti, because Krishna is unlimited, and bhakti is also unlimited. When we're doing bhakti, it never becomes routine. For example, we know devotees have been cooking the Mangalarti sweets as a service for for Krishna for 25 years. And every day they cook them, and they're always getting better, and they're always thinking of new ways to make them, and they're usually no one can do anything for very long, especially in Kali Yuga, because the minds are so disturbed that, you know, some things we're forced to do because of commitments. We're married and we have a family and we have a steady job, so we go every day for 40 years. You meet people, they work for 40 years, 30 years. But their hearts are not into it. It's routine. But devotee, he'll cook the Mangal Arati sweets for 25 years happily. And his mind will be absorbed with positive mood and positive attitude. Because he's feeling the presence of Krishna in his service. Because Krishna and bhakti are non-different. It's his energy. It's like when we say Swarup Shakti, that means it's me. My Swarup, my form, my energy, my personal energy. So bhakti is the energy of Krishna. It's Krishna's very energy that we're accepting, that we're taking, that we're serving. Because bhakti means Krishna's Swarup Shakti. So if you have bhakti, you have Krishna. If you're performing bhakti, it means you're serving Krishna, you're with Krishna. So then you feel very happy and ecstatic by that association. So positively thinking, feeling, and willing functions of the mind. Mind has three functions. It may be willing. Willing means acting. So my mind is engaged with my senses to send impulses to my senses and make them work. So I'm working. My body is moving and my mind is directing the movements of my body. That's the willing function, the kriya. Kriya function. But I'm not thinking about Krishna. I'm just thinking, when's lunch? I'm sweeping the temple room and I'm doing this, but in a few hours I'm going to have prasadam. I hope they made some good prasadam today because yesterday was terrible. so the willing aspect of my mind is engaged with my senses, and I'm positively willing to, yes, I'm willfully doing this service and I'm doing it. But are my feelings there? Is my heart into it? And am I thinking about the service and how to improve the service? That's why I was saying the other day that when we chant Hare Krishna mantra, that chanting should give us eyes of service. In other words, when we chant, someone chants Hare Krishna, then they finish 16 rounds, and then they don't see anything. They don't see anything but maybe the bed they want to crawl into. But if you actually chant, and because you're sankalpa, your intention is that I want service. Krishna, give me service. So to get service, you have to see the opportunities. You have to see the possibilities. Just like a man who's a businessman. He's a dedicated businessman. So what is he seeing? He's always seeing opportunities to make profit, to make business. Like maybe he's a salesman and he sells, toothbrushes or something. And he's driving down the road and he sees a sign. Oh, today there's a cricket match between Pakistan and India. Oh, there's a new stadium. 60,000 people are going to be there. Well, where's my toothbrushes? So he pulls his car over there and opens his trunk and he sees this as an opportunity. Someone else drives by and says, oh, you know, so what, cricket match. But so he sees, and everywhere he's looking, like a book distributor. A book distributor is always looking everywhere for an opportunity to distribute books. So, because the heart has this sankalpa, this idea, I want to make profit with my product. So our product or our sankalpa is the ambition and desire to please and serve Krishna. So when we actually chant Hare Krishna properly, we will see opportunities, not for profit. Well, it's profit because we will profit by serving Krishna. But we will see opportunities to serve Krishna everywhere. Soon we're chanting, we're absorbed in this meditation of Radha and Krishna, and just this meaning. It's called mantra chintata. Artha means the meaning, to meditate on the meaning of the mantra. And Prabhupada gave us this meaning. O Radharani, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in service of Krishna, and your service, and Krishna's service. So as soon as we're finished chanting, then we'll open our eyes, because we're absorbed, and we'll look, oh, I can do this, I can do that. What to speak if you already have so many designated or delegated services given to you, then in performing those services, Krishna will give you the eyes to see how to improve that service, and it will give you the heart, how to enter the heart of that service. Because every service has a heart, and the heart of every service is Krishna. So when you put your heart into the service, you'll enter the heart of Krishna, who is the service himself. And you can't separate the service of Krishna from, you know, the seva from the sevaka, the object of seva to the person who's rendering service. They become one. Because bhakti is, we say devotional service. That's the translation in English. We don't say service or work, karma, action, kriya, work. We say devotional service, loving service. Bhakti means serving with love. So that means our heart should be put into it. And then, because then if we put our heart into it, in our bhakti, in our service, then we will enter the heart of Krishna. Because bhakti is Krishna. Because bhakti is ladini shakti, isn't it? Bhakti is ladini shakti and samvit. So when we actually performing bhakti, we enter the heart of Krishna, which is, and that's Radharani. We feel her presence. This is the beauty of bhakti. And every person, every devotee, anywhere who actually touches that a drop of bhakti, it changes him. He says, oh, that was such a wonderful feeling, an experience. I rendered service. Because we actually perceive the presence of Krishna. So Prabhupada in Nectar Devotion, he explains his point like this. This is the pravritti aspect of anushilanam, or positive cultivation. Srila Prabhupada says, with our minds, we should always think of Krishna and plan how to please him. So we think, thinking of Krishna, okay, oh, I'm sitting in a corner. What are you doing? Sitting in the corner. Oh, I'm thinking of Krishna. Well, that's nice. It looks like you're sleeping, though. No, I'm thinking of Krishna. So then he's saying, you should think by planning. Planning means chesta. Chesta means planning and thinking. How to please him. Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, tomorrow's a Sunday feast. I'm going to cook the Sunday feast for the pleasure of Krishna. What should I cook? And then you just think over, oh, that's good. Oh, but I can make this. And then you plan. You spend, because Prabhupada said most work is done in the mind. That 99% of work or action is done in the mind. And then once the mind is, you know, fixed on the action that you want to perform, there's thinking, you think about it, yes, this is what I want to do. And then you feel, yes, I really want to do it. And then I really want to do it, and I have to do it, and I have to do it right now. And then the body is moving. So 5 minute service sometimes takes 3 months of planning. That service, which takes 5 minutes, stays in your mind, it sits in your mind for 3 months. Until you actually, when you put your attention on that service, and then you actually put your feelings behind it, then it's like within a few minutes it's done. For example, someone gave us this huge picture of Radha and Krishna, and we didn't know what to do with it. It was about a year ago, because I don't have any walls where it fits. It's this huge type poster thing. I said, anyway, I'll deal with it sometime. So I put it in a trunk. Then I thought, oh, it's Kartik's coming. This unfinished seva is there. So for 1 year, it took 1 year to get from the thinking platform to the active platform. So then Ameya, he was helping me. You were there, right? So then the service is only 5 minutes. Drill two holes in the wall and hang a poster. But it took 11 months of preparation because I put it on the back burner, as they say. So this is the way bhakti works, that thinking, feeling, willing. So Prabhupada is saying, let's take our minds, we should always think of Krishna and plan by planning how to please him. Then he says, we please him, and how do we do that? By following the predecessor acharyas. So this is the way, because we may have our own idea how to please. I think Krishna will be pleased like this. And then you do some crazy thing, you know, you decide, oh, I think Krishna will be very pleased by this. If on the entrance steps to the Brooklyn Temple, if I take wax, or if I paint, the Maha Mantra, because Prabhupada is coming tomorrow. So I'll paint the Maha Mantra on the entrance steps, and Prabhupada will be very pleased to see that we have the Maha Mantra on the steps coming into the temple. So someone had this idea. So they, that's in Lilamriti, you can see. So they painted on the entrance steps, Hare Krishna, and Prabhupada got out of the car, and he stopped. And he's just standing there. And he said, I can't come in the temple. I said, oh, what's wrong? Prabhupada, you don't feel well? He said, I feel fine, but why you put Krishna on the ground? He said, Krishna's here, you have to remove this. And then he went back to his apartment and they scraped or moved or whatever. So, we think it sounds pretty stupid, because maybe we've come, but we also do stupid things too. So the idea is our attempts to please Krishna, or our thinking and planning how to please Krishna, should be sanctioned and inspired by the predecessor acharyas. This is called Sadhu Vartmana Vartate. Sadhu Vartmana Vartate. This is the fourth limb of bhakti, following the path of the sadhus. One should always, now Prabhupada goes on, how else we should use our minds. One should always think of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan with his devotees and his speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. This is the mental culture of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is writing this in Nectar Devotion, 1969, that this is what we should do with our mind. We, the members of ISKCON, or any devotee of Krishna, we should use our minds in this way. This is the positive, the pravritti, the positive cultivation for the mind. This is anushilanam for the mind. It's very interesting how Prabhupada says, always think of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan with his devotees. Because we never think of just Krishna alone, because he's always with his devotees. So this means madhurya mayu bhakti. Then he says, but don't forget, there's also aishvarya mayu bhakti. There's Krishna in Vrindavan in the rasa dance and playing holy with the gopis and swinging in the julan and stealing their clothes in the yamuna and stealing the yogurt and butter from the gopis in Gokul. But there's also Krishna on the battlefield, the great philosopher, the great servant, the Parthasarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna. So this is the Aishwarya Mahi aspect. He showed the Virat Rup, the universal form. So in this way, Prabhupada is saying that for those who want sweetness, then you think of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. But then he said, and you should think of Krishna in Vrindavan, and not, he didn't just say only that. He said, and also his speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Because for Prabhupada, everything about Krishna is sweet, as we mentioned the other evening. And everything is attractive, and everything is satisfying, and everything is bhakti. So it's not the half-hen Ardha Kukuti, or whatever that phrase is, half-hen philosophy, or half-hen naya logic. That we accept Krishna and Vrindavan, but we don't accept Krishna and Kurukshetra. And we accept both, and we worship both. But our specific Ishtadeva is Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. So he said, this is the mental culture of Krishna consciousness. Because anushilana means culture, cultivation, action. Now the words, because we said it should be manasik and vachik and kayak. So the words, what is the positive use of the words? And Prabhupada said, we should always engage our words in preaching the glories of Krishna. This is called kirtan. This is from the introduction of Nectar Devotion, where Prabhupada is giving his purport on this verse, Anya Bilashini Shunyam. So, this is speaking the glories of Krishna, Krishna Mahima. He said, this is kirtan. Sometimes we think kirtan just only means kartals, mridanga, chanting on the in the temple or on the streets. But he's saying that, he said, this is called kirtan. Giving class or speaking, or sitting with someone, telling them about the glories of Krishna. And body, kayaka, or kayak, we can offer many services with our body as directed by one's personal spiritual master and perform with faith. So here, Prabhupada is indicating here the role of the guru in relation to uttam bhakti. So, and this is what Prabhupada explains in his purport. Uttam Bhakti, or pure devotional service, is only possible by the mercy of Krishna and his devotee. One's relationship with Krishna is established by taking initiation from a bona fide spiritual master in disciplic succession. Without initiation, one cannot connect his activities with Krishna. We perform devotional service by following a spiritual master, who himself is following the Guru Parampara, who are all following the orders of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Initiation by the spiritual master ensures purity and selflessness in our service. It's very interesting. This is from the introduction. Because we can say, well, I'm chanting, I'm reading, I'm making garlands, I'm doing cooking and making offerings, I'm doing so many what appears to be services that the devotees also do, initiated devotees, and I'm not initiated. But the difference is that when you're not under guru, then there's no one with a yardstick. Like, you may take the school books and go home and you study and you practice penmanship and you learn geography and you learn the capital cities of all the countries, and you're studying, you're doing everything that the students in school are doing. They're in third grade in the school, they're 10 years old and you're 10 years old, and you're home reading everything. They say, look, I'm doing the same. Oh, and then what's the difference? The difference is that we're with the teacher, and the teacher has one, what we call ruler, you know, wooden stick. And at home, there's no wooden stick, because there's no teacher. So when we're in school and we do something wrong, crack, the teacher gives us a crack. And that crack makes us very quickly learn a lesson or get in line. So the guru cracks the ego of the shishya. Because if we're left to our own, we can do all kinds of devotional service in our apartments or in our homes. 24 hours a day we can do. But still, we're holding on. We're holding on to our ego and our independence. I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I want to, and I'm doing it. I'm doing these things that I like to do, and I'm just serving Krishna day and night. But there's a difference. The students, the boy in the school will get a degree from the school. But you're studying at home, you won't get a degree. And so, this is what Prabhupada is saying. It's very interesting. Initiation by the spiritual master ensures purity and selflessness in our service. Purity, because when we surrender to Guru, we're not following our minds, but we're following his mind. And we're not doing what we want to do, but we're doing what he wants to do. So that itself means you have to sacrifice your ego. That's surrender. When you have to submit to someone else, because that's what keeps us from Krishna, is our independence. I want my independence. I don't want to surrender. So his independence is that I am the karta and I'm the bhoga. Ham karta, ham bhogi. I am the enjoyer and I am the doer. So when we submit and say, okay, Guru, you know, use me to do what you want. So then that's it's a very painful experience to give up one's independence. It's almost like ripping your soul out of your body. Because that's the very core of our existence, is our independence. That's the very core, you can say, the hard core of the jiva, is his independent spirit. To go where I want, do what I want, be what I want. I am an individual. I am free. It is my life. I do what I want. And all of a sudden you put a rope around your neck and you hand it to someone and say, here, I'm your dog. You know, roll over, I'll roll over. Stand up, run, fetch this thing, fetch that thing. That is very painful. So that's why one should be very, if he even has the idea that he may entertain such a action of surrendering to another person, better be a very qualified person, right, to handle your core of your existence. You offer the core of your existence. It's easy to get married, It's easy to do so many things in this world, because even you're married, it doesn't mean you marry someone. You may give your body or some money or some attention. It doesn't mean you give yourself. It doesn't mean to give your independence. The wife is just as independent. She has her independence, although they're living together, but they don't sacrifice that. And they can say, okay, get out from here. Because if they don't get along, you know, they don't have space or whatever. But when one actually goes to Guru, then this is what's sacrificed. Independent spirit. And that's why we're all here. Because we don't want to, because that's what the impurity is. Everyone says, oh, do this, you'll get purified. And take this bath or chant these rounds, you'll get purified. This is for your purification. So what is the impurity? The impurity is the independence. The impurity is the desire, is not accepting that we're meant to serve Krishna. This is the impurity. Impurity is not serving Krishna. This is the impurity, the independent spirit. So this is an interesting... This is Prabhupada in the context of this discussion. He's explaining like this, the role of the guru in Uttam Bhakti. So... So we perform devotional service by the initiation by the spiritual master ensures purity and selflessness in our service. Without initiation, we cannot connect with Krishna and know exactly what we should do to please him. This is the point. We can't really connect without initiation. Now this is the positive aspect of Anushilanam. Now the negative aspect, which is nivritti aspect, that means that's quite brief. It means to avoid committing offenses to the name and the deity, which we mentioned. Seva parada, nama parada. So that we have to, this is also action, but this is like negative action, which will help us in our positive action. Our positive action is always think and speak and act for Krishna's pleasure. But that might be blocked or interrupted by our wrong actions. We may be trying to serve Krishna or serve his holy name, chant his holy name, but then we're offending the holy name or making offenses in service. So that's wrong action. So we have to act to avoid the wrong actions. Is that clear? In other words, we have to actively, oh, these are the 10 offenses, oh, I should avoid them. Oh, these are the 32 offenses in seva aparat. I have to avoid those. It's a willful. First you have to learn and then action. So there's something that Prabhupada is explaining in his Nectar Devotion, the relationship between Anushilanam and Sarup Shakti. Krishna Anushilanam, or Uttam Bhakti, is a special function or transformation of Krishna's Sarup Shakti, internal spiritual energy. Srila Prabhupada says, all activities of devotional service are directly under the control of the spiritual energy, Sarup Shakti. So that's why I've been saying that bhakti is not something that's produced from the modes of nature. Bhakti is not produced from this body or mind or senses. It's not produced in this material world. It comes from outside of this universe. It comes from the spiritual world. It comes from Krishna. It's spiritual energy. This whole place is material energy. This is all material energy. So he says that the activities, it means bhakti, is directly under the control of the spiritual energy, Sarup Shakti. The whole jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness is under the spiritual energy. And he explains that means Krishna and the spiritual master. Bhakti Devi has nothing to do with the material world. That's the end of the Prabhupada's quote. It's very interesting, Prabhupada's saying that. Bhakti Devi has nothing to do with the material world. Right, an introduction of Nectar Devotion. So sometimes we say, oh, we have bhakti within us and it'll come out. There's no bhakti is like saying that there's someone inside your pocket. Yeah, he's lying there sleeping in your pocket. If someone is conscious or alive, then they won't just stay in your pocket. They'll move, they'll make a sound. Hey, why are you keeping me in your pocket? They'll express themselves. So bhakti is Krishna's energy. so it expresses itself. The body, mind, and senses of the conditioned soul are all unconscious, dull matter. The Sarup Shakti, the internal spiritual energy of Krishna, cannot manifest there. Though it is purely spiritual, the Sarup Shakti, this is interesting, although it is purely spiritual, the Sarup Shakti makes its appearance in the body, mind, and words when one takes shelter and initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. This is actually what happens. That we can say, without initiation, we are doing what is called bhakti abhas, like a shadow, a reflection of bhakti. You have a shadow. There's you and there's your shadow. Your shadow has, there's some black outline of your body, but there's no power there. There's no, although it's considered to be an extension of your consciousness, your shadow, but it is, you know, it's no substance there. It's only a shadow. There's no vastu. There's no power, no creative energy in a shadow. So the same thing, when one takes initiation, that's why we say bhakti lata bija, that Swarup Shakti comes down through parampara, through guru, then it's given to disciple. And then what happens is that Swarup Shakti, which is spiritual, which you'll see, it mixes with the senses. It's a very, very, you can say, mystical phenomenon. This is a description. Then the spiritual energy takes over the functions of the body, mind, and words. The disciple is like an iron rod, and the spiritual master is like fire. When the iron rod is immersed in the fire, fire then permeates the iron rod. The fire identifies with the rod and acts to burn other objects through the agency of the iron rod. The iron rod is not doing the burning, but the fire attains oneness with the rod. Right? So the spiritual energy is the fire, and our body is like, our body, mind, and senses are like the rod. So the spiritual energy comes down and mixes with our body, and we'll be saved, probably use the term, we become spiritualized. Then that spiritual energy, which has now converted us, and we become spiritualized, so that fire has converted our iron-like senses, body, mind, into fire. So then we act spiritually, or we act like fire. You follow? So the rod is not doing the burning, but the fire attains oneness with the rod. By the causeless mercy of Sri Guru and Sri Krishna, the senses, body, and mind of the conditioned soul become spiritualized and capable of performing bhakti or rendering devotional service to the Absolute Supreme Spiritual Person. In other words, by the mercy of Krishna coming through Guru Parampara, the bhakti shakti, the fire of devotion, which is Krishna's internal potency, attains oneness with the devotee's body, mind, and words, which is, in this analogy, is like the iron rod. And then that fire of devotion acts through the senses to please Krishna. Because we can't please Krishna with a material body. We can't please Krishna with material senses and mind. Because we're always acting the wrong way. We're always thinking the wrong way. But when the spiritual energy mixes with our body, mind, and senses, then we get the spiritual intelligence to think correctly, act correctly. And then under being connected with Guru, then everything we're doing is actually pleasing Krishna, because everything we're doing with spiritual minds, intelligence, and senses. This is how it works. And then Krishna, that's how Krishna is pleased. I just finished this. And the cultivation and activities of devotional service are part of Krishna's internal spiritual energy. The energy and inspiration to perform devotional service originates from Krishna's spiritual potency, Swarup Shakti, then flows down through the disciplic succession and is instilled in our hearts by the mercy of the spiritual master. That's why, I guess that's what happens. You can say when someone's initiated devotee and he's actually practicing bhakti, and then he, because his senses are now spiritualized, He's always filled with ideas for service, and he sees service everywhere. Where someone else who actually hasn't been initiated, because their senses have not been connected with that spiritual energy, then they chant Hare Krishna, they do so many things, but then they say, okay, let's eat, let's sleep. They don't see any opportunities for service. They don't have those eyes to see service, because this is what Swarup Shakti is all about. Krishna's Shaktis are serving him. He has 16 primary Shaktis, Shakti, Shaktiman. So Gir, Nila, Lila, Pushti, Tushti, there's so many different energies. These 16 Shaktis are represented by Jagannath's Rath cart. Because you move with if you have power, you can do something. If you have no power, you can't do anything. So Krishna, Jagannath, he's the Ishvara and he has power. So the 16 wheels in a Jagannath cart represent the 16 energies of Krishna. The power of speech, the power of nourishment, the power of sustenance and creation, all these things. There's 16 different ones. So this body, mind, word, senses, when they mix by initiation, then the spiritual energy comes down and mixes with them and fireizes them. We become spiritualized. Then we become like a live wire. You see devotees. A sincere devotee is very enthusiastic. These are the symptoms, automatically. Even they have this word, enthusiasm. Sometimes they define it as in theos. Theos means theology. Theology means God. So enthusiasm means to be near God. So if you're near God, you become very enthusiastic. You become very energetic to render service. So this is what happens. What makes it work is the contact of the Swarup Shakti. And you have to get this Swarup Shakti from an agent. Like the electric department, you have to meet the agent to get a connection, right? You can't just say, okay, I built this house, now I have electricity. No, you have to make an application, and then they come and check out your house, and then they give you a meter, and then they give you connection, electric connection, and your house is running with electricity. You can build a house, and it looks like everybody else's house, and even you put in light bulbs and everything, and wiring. But if you don't have a connection with the powerhouse, someone says, oh, your house looks just like us, but how come it's dark every night? Well, I don't have any connection. I just know with the powerhouse. So this is the thing, the difference. By surrendering to and following the spiritual master, we link our energies and activities to Krishna's internal potency. This is called Tadatma. That's later explained. Obtaining identification with it. By this yoga, which means connection, of bhakti, the yoga of loving devotion, serving God in love, our activities become spiritualized and our consciousness becomes purified. So we'll stop here. There's some questions. We'll take some questions.
How does an aspiring devotee, a devotee aspiring an initiation, should ensure that he is properly situated? For instance, you give an example that spiritual master's instruction serve as a yardstick, because there are many things that we would do on our own. We are independently doing it. We may read, we may do all these things, but there is no yardstick. You give an example of someone studying at a school and someone studying at home.
Yeah, there's no one to correct them or to punish them.
Correct. Now what happens is, there are a few fortunate individuals who get to actually live with the spiritual master. But not always it is possible to spend time with the spiritual master. So you just bank on whatever instructions you have received from the spiritual master. And even in that, the instructions you have received, you are perceiving them, you are absorbing them in your system within your own conception, with your own concepts and beliefs. And even with your own concepts and beliefs, which are not perfect, you're inclined to commit mistakes. So in that case, how does one ensure that he's properly situated till the time he gets the actual initiation?
Well, the point is that the guru is always with you, because Krishna's in everyone's heart. He's called Chaitya Guru. Chaitya means life, living force, Chaitana. So God is in the heart. And this is one of the basic principles of bhakti, is that when one turns his face towards Krishna, then Krishna helps him. Because he kind of guides you, because you said you may make mistakes in your endeavors before initiation or even after initiation. But by studying, you study, because the basis of progress is our faith in Shastra for most people. So we have faith in the teachings of Shastra, and then we read the Shastra, and the Shastras say, act like this and act like that. And then so our sincerity will be proven by how much we try to follow the dictation of Shastra. And then Krishna, who is monitoring our every motion in the heart, he will reciprocate with our sincere endeavor. He's there. Even though Guru is not there, or the potential Guru is not there to chastise or chasten the new bhakta, but the Guru, the Shiksha or Diksha Guru, they're only manifestations of the Paramatma, of the Chaitya Guru, Adi Guru. So he's there, and he's with you. So he sees that you're trying very sincerely. You can, like they have a phrase in English, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So you can't fool the super soul. He's a sakshi. He's a sarvakala sakshi. At all times he's witnessing our activities. So Krishna, because he, in fact, the super soul, is the one who directed you to Guru. Or he is the one that directed you to temple. Because he's controlling the wanderings of all living entities. So he's the one that perceives your situation. He's the first Guru that lends an ear. We have this phrase, lend an ear. In other words, listen, I have some problems. Can I talk to you about my problems? Yes, sit down. What's the problem? And you try to listen compassionately and guide them or help them, or at least listen to them. Be a good listener. So the super soul is the first person that lends an ear to the jiva. When the jiva is crying out for guidance or crying out for mercy or crying out for some kind of signal from God, then the super soul hears that. He says, oh, you have some genuine interest in me? You have some sincere desire to realize me? Oh, I will help you. You should go here, or you should go there. And sometimes people say, I don't know why it is. But one day I was sitting in my room, it was my day off, and I thought, all the time I drive my car to work, and I drive by this Hare Krishna temple. But I never stop there. They're crazy people. I don't really want much to do with them. But anyway, I think today, let me just stop there and see if these people have any brains, or what's going on with these people. And I have a day off. For fun, let me go there. So he goes there and he meets some devotee and has some discussion. Maybe he had another. So this is, you can say, Krishna directed him there. He had some curiosity, and then he had some piety in his previous life or this life. So Krishna reciprocated. So the super soul will be there even at every point. Because he's, and then at every point we have, and when we start approaching God through and looking for Guru, and then we start practicing to some extent bhakti, then we're being monitored by the super soul. And then he's seeing, oh, you're very genuine and you're very sincere and you really want something very perfect. And I'm seeing the sincerity of your actions. So we'll be rewarded, Krishna says in Gita. He doesn't say that if one is initiated, I reciprocate accordingly. He says, Yeyatam mam prapadyante, tamsta jaivam bhajamyam. Mamavart anavartante, manusha partha sarvasha. And fourth chapter of Gita, verse 11, famous verse. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So the super soul says, oh, you're interested in something in spiritual life or spiritual matters, okay, but you're not very sincere. I know, that's why I say you can fool some people, but you can't fool God. So he knows how sincere we are. And so he says, oh, here's your guru, Osho. You want a guru? Here's your guru, Osho, or Sai Baba, or any number of gurus are there from A to Z. And then you go there, and then he makes your faith steady also. You say, oh yes, this is very good. This guru is very good for me. I like this guru. Then Krishna says, okay, you like him. I'll help you. I'll make your faith steady in him. So it's like this. The super soul will help. And then it will guide you. He's always guiding us. But he's guiding us because he knows the whole stockpile of our karma, our prarabdha and aprarabdha and kutam. Kutam means a big pile, like anukut. Anukut means a hill of grains. So kutam or kuta means a pile of desires, a whole pile of desires, and bijam. So he will guide sincerity. So you try and you're praying and you're hearing and you're meeting different personalities. And at some point in time you may be convinced that this is the path I want to follow, this is the person I want to follow. Then see how it happens like this. Is that all right? It's okay. Any other question?
Oh, yeah. Maharaj, you're mentioning how Bhakti Devi has to come from another source that's not within us.
Mm.
Can you just clarify that in relation to the verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where it says, was it Nityasiddha Krishna Prema Sajjita, we know that Krishna consciousness is innate in the Sadhya Vida?
Yeah. There's different, obviously there's some different viewpoints of this concept, but when we'll read here Nectar Devotion, and that's why I mentioned here, this is from the introduction from Prabhupada, this very, very interesting key point where he's saying that Bhakti Devi has nothing to do with the material world. Right? So this is, because later in the verse it says, Nitya Siddhasya Bhavasya, Nitya Siddhasya Bhavasya, said that this bhava, which we want to attain, bhava bhakti, it is with the Nitya Siddhas, Radharani, Rupa Manjari, etc., or gurus in our parampara, Nitya Siddha. These are Nitya Parishas, or of course Nitya Siddha, and then there's those that become Nitya Siddha, or they come from there as Nitya Siddhas for preaching. It's different. There's Nitya Siddha Jivas, and there's Nitya Siddha Parishas, who are not Jivas, they're Surup Shakti. And they have this bhava. So the Prabhupada is explaining like this. It's when you look at it in one sense, he says that this Krishna prema is in the heart, and it's not to be gotten from elsewhere. He says like that, and you just hear and chant, and it comes out. But then other places he says you can't hear and chant unless you're initiated, and then he says bhakti lata bija, that because if we say that bhakti is in the heart, or prema is lying dormant in the heart, and it comes out just by hearing and chanting, then you don't need any guru. You're sitting here and chat and you'll be a prema bhakta, right? We've never seen ever that happen. So, if you put everything together, what Prabhupada said and what Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says and Rupa Goswami says, and so many places, and Prabhupada says that, you know, that we're acting in such a way to try to get the blessings. Everything is blessings and mercy. He says that you can only attain perfection by kripa siddhi, by mercy. Right? Mercy from whom? It means outside of yourself. It means that the ability to attain perfection is not within ourselves. So this is, as we study this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and compare the same teachings of Prabhupada, to kind of adjust all these things, it almost seems like Prabhupada is trying to make it easy. Don't worry, everything's within you, and don't worry. Because that same verse, you'll see that Nitya Siddha Bhavasya, that verse that's here, I think we'll come to that pretty soon. This verse in the commentaries, they're also mentioning this Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, because that's the parallel verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But the idea is that otherwise, because the whole idea, we're just reading all this thing about the Swarup Shakti comes down. Well, Swarup Shakti, that is bhakti. That is, Swarup Shakti is Prem. So Prem is always in motion. It's always active. So how can Prem be in our heart and just be sleeping? Because it's sleeping means it's dead. It's not alive. But Prem is living energy. It's moving. I don't know. Hare Krishna. It's definitely. Anyway, so this is sometimes because if you take this literally, what Prabhupada's saying, then there's no need for parampara. If you just take the verse on face value, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kavanai Shravanada Shudachite Koraya Udai. That Krishna Prema is eternally situated in the heart of the living entity. It's not to be gained from anywhere else. Just it will arise simply by the process of hearing and chanting. That's what Prabhupada says in the verse. But then you read somewhere else and says that we have to follow the resonance of Vrindavan, like Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari, and we have to pray for their mercy, that the Bhava Bhakti will come down from them. They have this Bhava Bhakti. This Bhava Bhakti is Prema. What is Prema? Prema is just condensed Bhava, right? So it has to come, we have to become anugata, we have to follow those resonances, we have to pray, and if they're merciful to us, then they will bestow the Bhava Bhakti from their hearts will come down to our hearts. So when you look at the totality of all the instructions, you have to try to find a consistency. If you just take out one thing, you say, oh, well then if you take out that one verse and you make a philosophy from it, then that on its own, that verse says, okay, there's no need for guru. Because it just says it's in you, you already have it. So, well, I don't need guru, I don't need parampara. I generate Krishna and it's already, it'll come out of me. But we've never seen anyone do that. So then there must be something else going on. So now we look for support, and we look at Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and we look at the description of Bhava Bhakti, and we're following. Because basically, to attain perfection, it comes from above. It has to come down. It's descending. And that's the whole thing I was reading about. The Swarupa Shakti comes down. We're like the iron rod. So what I understand, my personal understanding of all of this, is that the jiva, as I mentioned a few times in a few days, has a, at least I can understand, is that every jiva has a potentiality to love God. Like a field has a potentiality to grow crops. If you have seeds and you put them in a desert, there's nothing growing there. But if you put them in proper good soil that has good soil, then the crops will grow from there. So the heart of the jiva is soil. It is good soil. It's good earth, and it can, from that earth, prema can come. Prema can first sprout the bhakti lata. What does this mean? That this has any meaning? That we're wandering around all the universe. We're wandering all the universe. Ramanda Brahma Tikon, Bhagavana Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai, Bhakti Lata Beach. The Guru gives bhakti. If I have bhakti, what is the Guru giving me? I already have, what is bhakti? Bhakti is prem. Bhakti, prem. So, Bhakti Lata Bija, he's giving me the seed of bhakti. I already have it, then why do I need him? Right? I just, Hare Krishna, I'm in love with God. So that things don't, if you put everything together, all the whole parampara and gurus and disciples and surrender and coming down, Golokara Premadana Hari Nama Sankirtan. Right? This Hari Nama, it comes down. If we're chanting Hare Krishna, well, that Hare Krishna is Radha and Krishna. But there's Nama Bas, there's Nama Parad, there's Nama Bas, there's Shudanam. So we're chanting Hare Krishna so that the pure name comes down and mixes with our attempt. And then we experience. It's not that we can't produce pure name on ourselves. We're just chanting and behaving in such a way that in those syllables in the Maha Mantra, for us it's like syllables. But when Krishna is pleased, then he comes down, he descends, he doesn't come out of our heart, he descends from the spiritual world and manifests on the tongue. That's what Prabhupada said. He comes and dances on the tongue. That's Shuddha Nam. Well, this is my understanding of it. Otherwise, everything becomes meaningless. If you just take that verse, and you have a whole philosophy. Because when you read everything, that's why I always, these certain, if you read very, let's say, discriminately, like Prabhupada, like Nectar Devotion, you'll see all these kind of phrases. Bhakti is not producing material. So where our bodies are material. There's just a spark of Atma. There's this Jivatma. Jivatma is Tatastha Shakti, right? So we're saying, what are we saying? We're saying Prem is what? Sarup Shakti. You agree? Now, what are we? Tatastha Shakti. So Tatastha Shakti is also Shakti. And where are we manifested? Are we manifested in the spiritual world? We're manifested from Mahavishnu, right? Tata. So from Mahavishnu, we're manifested into this material energy. So we are a spark of spirit. So we have, like, you can say, sometimes it says also like this, that the soul has existence. Because we're existing. Everyone can agree to that. We're existing. Sandini. We have Sandini. We're existing. And Sat, we're eternal. Right? We say Sat Chidananda. Some wind is coming. That's good. Cold one? Can you open that? Put that chair there. There's some chair there. Let's put it in front of the door. So we exist. Everyone can agree, I exist, and I'm eternal, but I'm changing my body. So that's Sandini and Sat. Now, the next aspect is, so it's Sat, Sandini and Sat Chit Ananda, right? Or we say Sandini and Chit is his existence, and we're eternal. The next thing is Anand. So who's blissful? No one's blissful. Everyone's miserable. So this aspect of the Atma, Anand, if it's anything, it's atomic that it doesn't exist. So this is where you can say the prema is lying somewhere in there in the Anand. But we're Tathasta Shakti and we're Sandini Shakti, we're Sat. But there's no existence of this bliss. No one's a blissful, no matter what process they do, no one's experiencing bliss. So this, everywhere it says, is Swarup Shakti. It's a personal energy of the Lord. And otherwise, if we have prema, then we're also Swarup Shakti. And prema is within us, then we must be Swarup Shakti. And Swarup Shakti, how can it be dormant? How can Swarup Shakti be dormant, inactive? It doesn't make sense. So as far as I can understand, there's the potentiality, you know, that. So then that's the way when Swarup Shakti, then we can be utilized in the service of the Lord when Swarup Shakti mixes with us. This is what I understand.
Thank you.